Get a free bottle of Johnnie Walker Black Label Whiskey when you subscribe to The Spectator in our Black Friday sale. Go to spectator.co.uk/Friday.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Hill. I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Michael Gove. Now, Katie, we've just had the second reading of Kevin Leadbeater's bill on assisted dying, and it passed by 55 votes, majority, 330 votes to 275. Tell us more.
It's not a knife-edge vote. I think you can say that I think fairly split probably is not quite right, but it's not a unanimous backing of assisted dying. And I think if you actually look to within the breakdowns of the parties, so 92 Tory MPs voted against it, 23 Tory MPs voted for it, 147 Labour MPs voted against it, and 234 Labour MPs backed it. So obviously the Tories as a party, I think you can say, are fundamentally largely opposed to this bill, whereas Labour's is pretty split on it. And there is still a substantial number of Labour MPs who have reservations about the bill being brought forward. And we know within that group, there are some senior figures in the cabinet. And I think probably just before we dig into, I suppose, the debate and where this goes next, there are some who hadn't really said in advance how they would vote. So Rishi Sunak, former Tory Prime Minister, one of the only ones to not say in advance, and he voted for the bill. Jeremy Hunt, former Chancellor, also voted for the bill. And David Lammy, the Foreign Secretary, voted against the bill. So I think those were a few that we didn't know in advance where they would go. Keir Starmer, to no one's surprise, despite Keir Starmer saying he would not tell us how he voted,
yes,
I don't think we can be particularly shocked that the man who voted for it in 2015 told Esther Ranson he'd give the vote and has spoken in favour in the past has backed the bill, as has Rachel Reeves, Yvette Cooper and so forth. So I think there's a few things there, but yes, I think the feeling, we've just been in Parliament and we've just walked over, and not that you would expect it to be particularly celebratory on an issue like this either way, but I would say the mood is quite mixed in Parliament. And I think even some people I've spoken to who back the bill are a little bit uncertain about what happens now. And perhaps also I think there's some in government who see this almost potentially as a bit of a distraction from some of the other things they're doing, and it's now on a path where it's going to keep going. So I would say it's quite a strange mood today.
Well, it's a pretty grim subject, isn't it, as well? It's not really sort of champagne corks popping in the bars of Parliament today. Michael, what were your observations from that five-hour debate?
Well, on the eve of the debate, we knew that there were broadly 250 in each camp who were publicly declared. And I think, following on from what Katie said, those who were government ministers who'd followed the broad advice that the cabinet secretary gave, which is that unless they had to, they shouldn't really give their opinion. The sort of payroll vote has fallen in behind this measure, whether that's because it's a matter of deep conviction for all of them, or whether they feel that because Keir Starmer was known to be, even though he wasn't publicly in favour of the bill recently, he was known to be in favour of it, whether or not they thought that that was an appropriate cue that they should follow. It does seem as though the government has broken in that way. One observation that had been made, which tells you something about both parties, is that this vote tells you the difference in Labour between those people who are socialists and those who are progressive. And it tells you in the Conservative Party the difference between those people who are conservatives and those who are social liberals or libertarians. I don't think it's quite as simple as that, but I do think for keen students of not divisions, but you know, different emphases within the political parties, it is worth looking at in that way. So a number of the Labour MPs who voted against are people who one wouldn't want to classify as blue Labour or old Labour, but they're certainly people who come from a Labour tradition which owes more to Methodism than Marxism.
And of course, you mentioned that about that divide in the Conservative Party. Only 23 Tories voted for this measure, but there were a disproportionate number who were very senior in Rishi Sunak's cabinet and shadow cabinet. You know, Rishi Sunak, Mel Stride, Oliver Dowden, Jeremy Hunt, Victoria Atkins, etc. I just wonder what you think about that says about the recent Conservative leadership, perhaps.
I think it is interesting that it's people who have exercised, you know, serious executive roles in the past. But I think it's also the case that they're people whom one would think of as on the socially liberal and or progressive end of the spectrum, generally, who tend to vote in favour. And I think it's difficult to say that there are particular leadership tribes that have broken in this way. I think it's more appropriate to say that there's a slight sort of Cameroon shading to those who voted in favour and less so to those who voted against. But these things are never precise. There are always exceptions. But that's the broad thrust of it. I mean, I myself, were I in the House of Commons, would have voted against. I think I'm a social liberal on lots of issues. But here I would have been strongly opposed to the bill. And I was moved by some of the speeches that were made by people like Florence Escher Lomi and, of course, by Danny Kruger. And in the run-up to the second reading today, I think that the better and more powerful arguments have been made by opponents of the bill. But as was clear from the debate, there are people on each side who admire each other, and there are people who are sincere proponents of this legislation and who voted for it, whose integrity and passion one cannot but admire, even as I feel a deep sense of foreboding now that this Rubicon has been crossed.
And talking about the Rubicon being crossed, Katie, what happens next in terms of the process of this bill?
So the bill will go to committee stage and there'll be various changes suggested and so forth. And I think one of the interesting things in the debate was an argument made by David Davis and others was, you know, this bill might not be perfect. There may be things you have doubts about, but why not just take it to the next stage and then we can fix it then? Which does remind you of some of the crunch votes of the, in previous years on different issues. Now, perhaps this is just a bit of a device to get it to the over the line. I think that speaking to some this morning, they thought it would pass at second reading, but might not get all the way to passing into law. I think with a majority of 55, it probably has a fairly decent chance of becoming law. There is a question, I mean, I think you've had Danny Kruger, for example, speaking since the results came through, suggesting that they can try and improve it, and if not, then kill it at third reading. Are enough MPs going to change their mind? So I think we are probably on the path where nothing is completely certain yet, but perhaps the most likely outcome right now is that this will become a change in, obviously, England and Wales. And then I think you have the question of implementation and what does that mean for, you know, Wes Streeting, the health secretary. He's been pretty critical of it. Now, he has said he will do his duty if it passes into law, be a professional. You have Shabana Mahmood, who received a lot of heat this week with her comments over it, suggesting it was, you know, state deaf facility. And again, she has also said, well, I can do my job implementing it. But I think you're going to start to, you know, as more questions are asked about how you bring this in what ways, you know, is it, will there be anything private? What will be the NHS? All those things. Potentially, you are going to see if it is the case that those with issues with it, for example, you could have a practical issue in the implementation where you are thinking practically in your brief that you need to do X and Y. But is that harder to be taken seriously on if you have been against it on ethical reasons as well? So I think that will be another facet in terms of where this goes.
And I wonder, Michael, what were the sort of highlights for you from this five-hour debate today? Then?
Well, I think that almost all of the contributions were both from the heart, but in particular, when you're dealing with some of the more technical questions here, managing to maintain a tight control of the argument while at the same time also allowing the passion that people undoubtedly felt to be communicated. That's a tough balancing act for anyone who's speaking in a highly charged debate. So I think Jess Asato, who's the MP for Lowestoft, talked about, Labour MP, talked about the issue of coercion with great skill and effectiveness. Florence Escher Lomi, whom I mentioned earlier, gave a very moving speech, which again related her own family experiences. And those arguing for the measure, including, of course, the promoter of the bill, Kem Leadbeater, she's had to put up with a lot. As I say, I disagree with her proposition, but she maintained her dignity absolutely throughout. And then someone whose speech I very much disagreed with, but who is undoubtedly a very good debater, is Kit Malthouse, one of the Conservatives most in favour of it.
I suppose one question is, and I think we at The Spectator have been quite critical of this bill and also the wisdom of Keir Starmer in bringing it. Does the result today suggest that he was right to think now is the moment to do it because it does look as though there is a path there? I think you can argue it. I still don't think it's a resounding victory in the point that I think when this was first thought of in terms of the new parliament, you would expect the margins to be a bit more of a decisive win than what we saw today. And then I think there's the question as to, I think he will get what he wants, likely. But I think there are figures in his team, you know, around him, who were expecting some moves in the next week or so in terms of Keir Starmer trying to sharpen up his message, put Downing Street on the right foot. And when you do speak to various government aides these days, they are saying, we're just talking about death. We're just talking about death. So does this allow you to move away from that? Or is this just going to keep going throughout it? And suddenly, even though it's a free vote and it's a private members bill, is one of Labour's big, this is what we've done with our time. Do we own it as this, that they did assisted dying?
I suspect that Katie is absolutely right. A, I think that while it wasn't a thumping majority, it will be enough to see it through the committee stage. I think that Lucy Powell, the Leader of the House, has indicated, and unless Katie corrects me, that the government will now take control of the bill. And so therefore, during the committee stage, I imagine supporters of the bill will be in a majority on the committee. That doesn't mean that they won't scrutinise it carefully, but it does mean that they will win the critical divisions. I think when it comes to the House of Lords, the structural majority in the House of Lords will be in favour of this legislation. So I think it will eventually reach the statute book. But as it progresses, because it raises such momentous issues, it will be one of the principal legislative measures with which the first 2 years of this Labour government is associated. For those who believe that it is a genuinely progressive change, then they will think that if they look back, it will rank with David Steele and Roy Jenkins' moves on abortion and capital punishment and so on. But I actually think that this is a far less clear-cut issue in the public mind, and that as scrutiny increases and as awareness increases, so the difficulties, including the difficulties of implementation that the relevant ministers, the Justice Minister Shabana Mahmood and the Health Secretary Wes Streeting have brought out, will come more and more to the forefront.
And of course, just after those reforms, Labour famously lost that 1970 election as well. Just as a final question, Katie, you talked there about changes in the team, sharpening up personnel. We have a new Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander. Just wondered if you give us a bit of sort of thought on what's going on there.
Well, what's going on is Louise Hague has gone, as we talked about on this morning's podcast, and they've clearly decided to move quickly, also not to make it into a wider shake-up. Heidi Alexander has had time working with Sadiq Khan, so therefore comes from someone who I think will have plenty of their own experience in terms of transport infrastructure, bringing it to that brief. Quite interesting, because Heidi Alexander was in the Ministry of Justice as one of Shabana Mahmood's ministers. And because Heidi Alexander, just to link everything together, has been quite pro-assisted dying in the past, one of the theories was, if Shabana Mahmood is really against it, she has a senior figure who gets on very well with Keir Starmer, who is of the same thinking as him in this, but clearly they have confidence for now that everyone can keep going with assisted dying and move Heidi Alexander to what is a promotion and a big brief from someone who's spent time in Parliament, outside of Parliament, and come back.
Yes, Heidi Alexander is knowledgeable and likeable. She was an MP for Lewisham. She stood down in order to work, as Katie says, for Sadiq Khan, specifically in this area. So she's demonstrated commitment to it. She then came back into Parliament, standing in Swindon, won her seat from the Conservatives. And I recall from my own time in Parliament that she's a well-liked figure, not just within the Labour Party, but more broadly. People recognise that she's someone who is in public service for the right reasons. So I think it's from the point of view of the government, the Louise Hague resignation is a blow and a sadness. But again, from the point of view of the government, I think that, to my mind, there were only two possible people who could have done this job, either Heidi Alexander or Douglas Alexander, no relation.
Well, two of the 13 retreads elected in July. Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening to Coffee House Shots.